This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Some thorny issues dealing with sexuality are going to be discussed this hour, so if there are tender ears around, you might want to turn your radio down. But that begs the question, how comfortable are you talking about sex? How comfortable are you talking about sex with children? Could it be that the social discomfort with such things is what's keeping us from more success in combating child sex abuse? At least one of our guests says yes, indeed, that is much of the problem. And she also says she wants far more adults to get uncomfortable so that far more children can be kept safe. Our second guest says parents have a fine line to walk between vigilance and hypervigilance. In a few minutes, we'll ask therapist Anna Arias and psychiatrist Eileen Ryan to explain further. But we certainly also want to hear your perspective on preventing child sex abuse, so I hope you will dial in right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Preventing and treating childhood sex abuse is our focus today. If you have thoughts to share, you are most welcome to join in at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. My first guest is both a therapist at, as well as associate director of, the Harrisonburg-based Collins Center and Child Advocacy Center. Anna Arias, welcome to the Insight Studios.
Thanks for having me.
So, Anna, you want adults to get more uncomfortable on the issue of child sex abuse.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
That's actually the only way we're really going to prevent it from happening in our community. Right now, the way historically child sexual abuse has been handled is adults telling children, make sure no one touches you in a way that they shouldn't, and let us know if they do. Well, that's not prevention. That is reaction. That's after perpetration has occurred. So if we really want to prevent this, if we really want to change the world, which idealists as we are, we think it's possible, but we have to ask adults to be incredibly uncomfortable. Most adults don't want to talk about this. It makes them feel uncomfortable. It makes them have socially awkward moments. But we do need that to happen if we're really going to keep our kids safe.
To what end? Tell me about how you would see adults engaging in discussions on this issue that, one, would be uncomfortable, but two, would end up helping prevent abuse.
Well, children need to know that their body boundaries are respected and that we as adults respect that. And as parents, our job is to make sure, first of all, we tell our children that, and then if we see an adult who's not being respectful, that we take it upon ourselves to say something about it. So I'll give you an example. I have three sons. When my oldest was 3 years old, he was running around the living room in circles, because that's what three-year-olds do sometimes. And at the time, my ex-husband's mother and stepfather were visiting us. So my ex-stepdad, Dean, was sitting in the living room tickling my son as he made circles. And we were all there. All the adults were there. I've raised my son to let him know that if anybody ever makes him uncomfortable, he can let me know and I will step in. So I'm watching my son run circles and I'm watching Dean, you know, sitting on the sofa, reaching out and tickling him appropriately as he's running. And my son is giggling and he's giggling every time he gets tickled. Well, Dean is an adult, and I think we all know adults in our families who just sometimes are too rough with kids, and they don't read kids' body language that well. So my son starts swerving a little bit to kind of not let Dean tickle him. So just Dean reaches out even farther and tickles him a little harder. And now my son's not giggling, but he's still running laps, and so I don't say anything. And he's running laps, and Dean is tickling him. Now my son is frowning. And then my son stops and he's crying and he comes over to me and he says, "Mommy, Dean hurt me. He tickled me too hard." Now, Dean was embarrassed, but he didn't say, "Well, I'm sorry." He said, "Well, you were laughing earlier and now it's a problem." And he just kind of blew it off. And then there was this awkward moment in the room where I had a decision to make. Every inch of me wanted to say to my son, "Well, that's what you get when you horseplay. Sometimes it just hurts, and that's just, you know, you shouldn't horseplay," because that's the socially right thing to say. But because of the knowledge I have, because I know what it takes, I took a deep breath and I felt my ex-mother-in-law's eyes on me, waiting to see what I would do. And I said, thank you, Ricky, for telling me. Dean, that hurt, Ricky. Please stop. Now, that in that scenario right there, I have just increased his protective factors, my son's protective factors. I don't think Dean was going to be inappropriate with my son. I don't think that Dean was going to molest my child. No one ever does, though. No one ever knows what adult is safe and what adult isn't. If we knew, that would make it a lot easier, but we don't. But what I do know is that if Dean did ever have inappropriate thoughts or actions towards my son, I have just reduced the chance that he would act out on my son because of the way I was willing to be uncomfortable.
Is there also something, Anna Arias, that in going through that state of uncomfortableness for yourself and knowing that as a result, probably all the adults in the room were going to be uncomfortable?
Yes, it was awful.
The end result, though, is that your three-year-old got a better sense that he has a right to say, I can be safe.
Yeah, he knows that when he is done being touched in any way, he gets to say
by
stop.
By anybody.
And that's important because we know that 95% of perpetrators are family or friends of the family. So my son knows that I'm going to back him up and I'm going to say to the other adult, my son has the right to say no to a touch. I also come from a Hispanic family, and very cultural is as soon as you see family, everybody kisses everybody. Well, my oldest son does not like to kiss people. And so I say, because it's so important that I teach my son that his body is his and he gets to choose, he does not have to kiss you if he doesn't want to. Now, my family rolls their eyes and they put up with me. But once again, I'm giving my son the message that it doesn't matter who it is. If someone's making him uncomfortable, he can talk to me about it and I will believe him and I will back him up. And that's that kind of environment, you know, that you want your sons and your daughters to be raised in, knowing that when it's safe, we will back them up. Also, when it's not safe, we will back them up.
And licensed professional counselor Anna Arias from the Harrisonburg-based Collins Center is here with me in the Insight studio. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Joining us now by phone is a woman who is part of a forensic psychiatric unit at the University of Virginia, as well as a staff psychiatrist at the mental health treatment facility known as the Commonwealth Center for Children and Adolescents. Eileen Ryan, thank you for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Dr. Ryan, you say that when it comes to preventing childhood sex abuse, parents have to walk a fine line between vigilance and hypervigilance. Tell us more about that.
Well, I agree completely with what Anna just said. I think that parents need to be comfortable with talking with their children about these issues and to feel comfortable with backing their kids up. What I mean by walking a fine line between vigilance and hypervigilance is unless you have your child with you at your side 24/7, which we can't do, that would be hypervigilance. I think that you need to be vigilant and provide the kind of supervision that people used to feel was overdoing it, but really isn't. For example, an example of, I think, appropriate supervision is if you are at a birthday party with your child, you're at a YMCA, you're at a roller skating rink, you don't let your child go into a bathroom unattended. That to me is the sort of vigilance that parents need to have. And as Anna said, we know that the vast majority of sexual abuse is perpetuated by family and acquaintances, but when there is stranger abuse, these are the kinds of situations where they tend to occur. You know, parents are basically in the facility, but have allowed their child to go into a bathroom unattended. I think that in terms of supervision, parents need to be try to be as much as possible very much aware of whom their children, who their children are going to be having contact with. And, you know, as Anna said, sometimes you can feel very uncomfortable with this. For example, if your child is going over to another child's house, you want to know what, you know, who they're going to be having contact with, who's going to have access to the child. Importance with babysitters also. And that can feel very uncomfortable at times, but it's important, I think, to provide that level of supervision and for adults to sort of have a sense that although we don't want these things to happen, that there is a risk, even in what seem to be benign situations, that this kind of abuse can occur.
We are talking about preventing and treating childhood sex abuse. If you have a question, a comment, a thought to run past our guests, you can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer, you can post a question or comment on our Facebook page. We're listed on Facebook as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And our first Facebook posting, Eileen and Anna, asked a couple of questions. We said, can we break the taboo on discussing childhood sex abuse? Might it help with prevention? And Carolyn wrote in response to that, I don't think there is a taboo on discussing any type of child abuse. Quite the opposite. Aren't child care professionals required to report suspected abuse, Anna?
Well, and that's a good point. Absolutely. Mandated reporters are supposed to, and hopefully do, report any suspected child abuse. I think the taboo question comes in because socially it's awkward and most people are not talking about it. Whether they should be talking about it or not is what we're talking about today. I think everybody should be talking about it just because it's such a big problem and we're seeing so much of it. But I will say when I'm at a party and people ask me what I do for a living, it's the fastest way to make people walk away from me. So I do think most people don't want to. The response is, oh, I'm sorry. And then they walk away.
What do you say when people ask you what you do?
Well, it's part of it, I think, is I say I work with child sexual abuse instead of just saying I'm a therapist, because I do want people to talk about it. And it makes people uncomfortable every single time. But then the people who
are... What do
you
think that discomfort is about?
As a society, we're not used to it. We don't talk about sex. We don't talk about sexual abuse. We don't talk about it with kids. We don't talk about it with adults.
Dr. Eileen Ryan, agree, disagree?
I agree. And I think that another reason that people avoid it is because it's painful. People don't know what to say. People don't know what to do. And so they just avoid the issue. In terms of treatment, one of the most effective treatments that is a fairly recent treatment that's been developed over the last 10 years is trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. That's a mouthful, but one of the pieces
trauma-focused behavioral cognitive therapy.
Trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay.
And one of the most effective parts of that treatment is something called the trauma narrative. And what that requires is the child with the therapist over time developing their narrative of what happened to them and sharing that with the parent.
And Eileen, I have to ask you to pause for a second.
Sure.
I really do want to hear more from you on this, but we have a break coming up in about 10 seconds. I also want to tell Jason from Harrisonburg that he will be our first caller up when we get back from the break in just a bit more than 1 minute. Dr. Eileen Ryan is a staff psychiatrist at the mental health facility known as the Commonwealth Center for Children and Adolescents. She also does work in forensic psychiatry as a faculty member at the University of Virginia. Dr. Ryan is with us by phone. Here in studio, Anna Arias. I did that wrong, didn't I?
That's fine.
It's Arias.
Yeah.
Arias.
Mm-hmm.
Anna Arias, Associate Director of the Collins Center and Child Advocacy Center, as well as a therapist for children at those centers. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Jason in Harrisonburg, thanks for calling in. Your comment or question, please.
I was just going to say that I worked as a camp counselor for 7 years, and I think that the point that one of your guests made about how sometimes saying the awkward thing is the best thing to do is absolutely dead on. I was in, nothing ever happened, but I was in a similar situation to the thing that she described where, sometimes things with children, sometimes people can't read them, and I think things get out of hand, and it's so important to speak up in a situation like that because it empowers the child and it prevents harm, and I just think that was a really fantastic point that she made.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you for speaking out and saying that also. We need more adults saying, yeah, this is okay. It's okay to be uncomfortable. We are expected to protect children in so many other areas, but then we kind of just shirk the responsibility on this one because it's awkward. So any adult that's willing to say, yeah, when it makes me feel uncomfortable and I do the socially awkward thing of holding other adults accountable, I'm ultimately doing what's going to be best for that kid. So thank you for doing that, and thanks for being willing to call in and support that idea.
Jason, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here. 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. If you have any questions or thoughts about preventing or treating childhood sex abuse. Dr. Eileen Ryan, you were describing before we hit the break a particular kind of therapy that's found effective. I want to ask you to talk more about that in a moment. Before we go there, I really like to hear from you and from Anna what kinds of problems you see as a result of children experiencing sexual abuse. Before we talk about the kind of treatment that's effective, what kind of disabilities do you see in people who've been sexually abused as children?
Well, there are a variety of problems, disorders, symptoms, and I think that it's important when we do talk about treatment that one individualizes the treatment to the individual person, whether it be a child or an adult. We see just generally a real compromising of the child's or adolescent's ability to trust. That is something that then can follow the person in, and often does follow the person into adult relationships, which can be problematic. There's also depression is frequently a result of sexual abuse. If someone is already vulnerable, whether because of biology, genetics, or some other reason to depression, being sexually abused can really increase the effects of that. We also see anxiety disorders. Probably the most common one is post-traumatic stress disorder. But you don't have to meet what we call full criteria, meaning you don't have to have full-blown post-traumatic stress disorder to be impaired, to have difficulty, particularly for children, with kind of being able to move developmentally in an appropriate way. What we sometimes see is that children who have been sexually abused avoid relationships. They avoid being, for example, girls who've been sexually abused will often avoid being with boys, avoid some of the normal developmental, what we call milestones of adolescence. On the other hand, they can move in the opposite direction. They can be more indiscriminate in their sexuality, and people sometimes don't understand how that can happen, but it can.
Anna Arias, you treat both children and adults who experienced sexual abuse when they were children.
Yes.
Same question to you in terms of what these people who have experienced this kind of victimization end up with. I would imagine, especially for adults, you're talking to people who, if they're coming to you for the first time, have kept this part of their life hidden for many years.
Yes, like Dr. Ryan was saying, and I'm sure all the listeners are picking up on, it's complicated. And there are a wide array of mental health issues that can come out of sexual abuse. And so anyone coming in can present with a different, you know, depression or PTSD or any kind of anxiety. And it can sometimes be traced back to those early abuse. There's also a lot of substance abuse. But the truth is that it hurts. It's a betrayal. It's usually by someone that they knew and loved who should have protected them instead of abused them. And so children and adults trying to make sense of the pain, you know, have different symptoms. Some of them try to self-medicate so they don't have to remember. A lot present to counseling with different symptoms. And so depending on where they're at in their journey, then the treatment, you know, that you use for them is going to be tailored in that way.
To you who are listening, part of the reason that we are discussing this today is because of the Penn State scandal that has been in the headlines for many weeks. And the conviction of the assistant coach found guilty of sexually abusing and molesting 10 young boys, accusations of many more molestations and abuses than that, but that was the conviction. So part of what we're wondering about here is, if this kind of horrendous scandal makes the headlines in the way that this has for the past few weeks, might that end up doing some good? Might it end up being a situation like where Betty Ford talked about her breast cancer diagnosis back in the 1970s, and all of a sudden something that had been a taboo to talk about was removed and many more people sought treatment? Or is this something that's just so uncomfortable that you think people are not going to make any progress anytime soon on preventing child sex abuse? Our phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. In Fort Valley, Nikki, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Eileen Ryan and or Anna Arias, please.
Hi, Tom, your biggest fan here in Fort Valley. My question is, how do parents go about protecting their children and imparting the information to them about these perils without raising fearful children? Mm. As I'm a reserve analyst and I do my work in communities like townhomes and condominiums, I do facilities evaluations. And 15 years ago, when I started doing this, children would say hi and come up and, what are you doing? And what's that measuring tool? What does it do? And now kids look the other direction. They look down. They will not look you in the eye, sometimes run up to the front door when they're playing in their front yard. How do you raise children with to avoid this fearful level?
Oh, I love that question. That is such a good question. Thank you for asking it. I think that's why a lot of parents don't talk to their kids about this, because they don't know how, and they don't know how to do it without freaking them out. My sons are raised talking about this, and they have no idea they should be scared about it. A lot of this kind of education we do is stranger danger, which is why kids are afraid of strangers, which, no, it's not a bad idea, but it's not really preventing child sexual abuse when we know that 95% of perpetrators are known offenders.
Yes.
Now, there's all this...
By known offenders, you mean they're known to the family.
To the victim. So, and the family, yes. So when you are doing prevention work, you're educating your child. And here's the really cool part. My kids don't know that their private parts are shameful. And that's really exciting, because it's just a part of their body. So when we're talking about educating children, We're talking about teaching your two-year-old the proper names for their body parts. You have an ear, you have an eye, you have, you know, a bottom, and that's just kind of, it's just kind of what, how it is in our family. And we talk about these things, and they're not to be scared or upsetting, but my sons also know that nobody should touch their private parts, and they should not touch anybody else's private parts, and they shouldn't push anybody, and nobody should push them. It's just kind of that ongoing conversation.
Is it possible, even by calling certain parts of your body private parts, that there's shame connected to that? Or do you use actual words like penis and testicles and scrotum and things like that?
We use actual names. I just wasn't sure if I could say them on the radio.
Now that I have, I suppose you can.
Thank you for breaking the warning
at the top of the hour that we were going to be explicit.
Well, thank you, Tom, for willing to be uncomfortable in the moment. Yes, my sons know they have penises, and they know that they're... Now, here's another change that we do, is we don't say just they're private. We say they're private and they're special. And that's a real hard thing for adults. They're like, oh, I don't want to tell them that their penis is special. It's like, well, it is. It's private and it's special, and that's why we take care of it. And that's why no one else should touch it, just you. And my sons know. In fact, my two-year-old plays with these two little rubber duckies in his bathtub. And the other day, he was having one rubber duck, his name is Daniel, say to the other rubber duck, hi, Daniel, how are you? Oh, I'm okay, but don't touch my penis. Okay, I won't. Okay, thank you. That's mine, and only I can touch it. So it's just, for him, he's not afraid of it. He just knows that that's his, and it's private, and it's special, and it's just normal.
So getting to Nikki's question about creating too much fear in children.
Yes.
Part of what you're saying is there's too much emphasis on the whole stranger danger lesson. And,
yes.
And not enough emphasis on...
We can talk about this. Yeah, like the fact, like the story I told earlier about my son and Dean, he was not afraid. My son wasn't afraid any time in that. He came up to me and said, Dean hurt me. And I said, absolutely, Dean, you need to stop. I was afraid. I was uncomfortable. But my son never was. And so it is hard because adults don't know what to say. Now, like Dr. Ryan was saying, you do it appropriately. At each age, you give enough information so it's appropriate. We don't want to, you know, over-educate children when they're not ready for it. But there are developmental stages you can follow and do it in a way that's just, this is what we talk about. It's not that big a deal, but you need to know to be safe. The other thing that's very important is that perpetrators pick their victims. And they pick kids who don't know anything about sex and don't know anything about their bodies. And we know this because we've interviewed perpetrators and we've done research. And that's what they say. They say, I knew what I was doing. And even with the Penn State, he knew who he was picking as his victims.
Nikki, thank you so much for your call. Next, we're going to go to Joe, who's traveling along Interstate 81. Joe, your question or comment for Anna Arias and or Dr. Eileen Ryan, please.
Yeah, my question is for either of the experts. I am a grandfather, and actually a grandfather of nine. But a number of years ago, our granddaughter and her older brother, and she was about seven, and her older brother was 10, 11, and he had a friend that lived right across the street. And they all played together, the grandson and the friend. And the friend privately sexually abused our grandson's younger daughter, and she was unbelievably traumatized, came immediately after the little boy went home, when the play date was over. And we're talking about people who live right across the street from each other. Mm. And she had tears in her eyes and expressed, that this friend of her older brother's had done this to her. The parents obviously went and immediately addressed the parents and the young boy across the street who denied it.
Joe, if I might ask, the ages of the children involved,
okay,
how old was your granddaughter at the time?
The little girl was seven, and the boy that abused her was 10, 11, as her older brother was. And they, so long story short, she could not ever be away from her mom and dad for about 2 or 3 years. As she went through therapy, which eventually was a terrific benefit to her, she now can go on overnights with friends and families and things like that because she herself is now about 12 or 13. But it,
Joe, if you could hang on the line here for a moment, because I want to bring Dr. Ryan into this discussion. Eileen Ryan, how common is this?
This is not an adult. This is a child doing it.
We got that, Joe. Hold on. Yeah. How common is this, having an older child abuse a younger child?
Well, it's not uncommon. You know, at least what we know is that of minors, children that are sexually abused, that about a third of them, or possibly more, are abused by other minors. So this is not unusual, and I think it sort of brings up one of the most difficult aspects of this is that, you know, no matter how vigilant you are as a parent, in a healthy kind of a way, these kinds of things can happen. Now, you know, your granddaughter immediately went and told her parents, which, you know, speaks to a level of trust that she would be believed and cared for. But unfortunately, there are many children who do not tell their parents about this very kind of thing, and it can go on for years. And obviously, the damage done and the trauma is worse in those situations.
Joe, did you have a specific question?
No, I mean, my question was, in fact, that when these things become apparent to, obviously, to the parents or grandparents or family, one of the things is, well, these are just kids. They're just kind of exploring and things like that. But the trauma was done. Mm-hmm. And so my question is that in situations like this, I am assuming that it is imperative that the parents take the child that has experienced this into some form of therapy to determine the depth by which the child has been traumatized.
Anna Arias, you're nodding your head.
Yes.
Joe, thank you so much, excuse me, for calling in and sharing this. And I'm sorry that your family went through that, but I am glad that you are willing to talk about it. And you're absolutely right. Therapy can be very helpful. I will also say a lot of adults do, when they hear these things, don't know what to do because it's two children. Right now, there's some current research that's showing the average age of someone who is perpetrating on children is a 15-year-old boy. So it is becoming more common, and we're being more aware of this happening, which is important. Also, there's a lot of concern, like, well, I don't want to say anything. Maybe it's just normal. There is normal developmental play, but that's with same-age children, and that's very specific to a few things. When you have more of a 3-year age difference, which is what you have here, it mm-hmm. becomes perpetration, not normal developmental curiosity. And so that's when it actually can become criminal. So you're right. A lot of parents will call us sometimes and say, well, I walked in on my kid and his friend, and this is what they were doing. And we can guide them through what is normal and what is not. And anytime you have a three-year age difference like that, it is not no longer normal. So thank you for bringing that up.
Joe, thank you so much for your call. Licensed professional counselor Anna Arias from the Harrisonburg-based Collins Center is here with me in the Inside Studio. With us by phone from her office at the hospital known as the Commonwealth Center for Children and Adolescents is psychiatrist Eileen Ryan. You're invited to join the conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK when we get back in just about 1 minute. So we're talking about something that can be a very sensitive and difficult issue for many people. And as I said at the outset of the discussion today, if there are tender ears nearby, since sexuality is being discussed openly, it's going to be your decision about whether or not you want to turn your radio down. I want to tell you that I've also struggled with something else in preparing for today's show, knowing that this is such a sensitive issue and that there are plenty of people listening who have some experience, even beyond what Joe, our most recent caller, was talking about with his granddaughter. and wondering if you can call in and tell a little bit about your story so people understand more about this issue. So what I need to tell you who are listening is I have personal experience with this, that I was sexually abused and raped a number of times as a very young child in situations involving a foster mother and a variety of her boyfriends and clients. Because of the fact of the matter is, when I was in her care, she was doing some work as a prostitute. And when these memories began coming back to me as an adult, obviously with recovered memories, I doubted them at first until I was able to contact another person who was exposed to some of the same people, who was much older than me, an older child. And he remembered and had never forgotten the names of the people that had come to mind for me as I began to recall what had happened to me as a small child and the difficulties that I've experienced as an adult since then. I'm not going to talk at length about those difficulties here unless somebody specifically wants to ask me a question. I simply tell you this much so that you know if you're thinking about calling in and telling us a little bit about your story, you're not alone. There are people here, including the host of the show, who understand very much how much a struggle this can be. And you don't have to use your real name. You don't have to tell us where you're from. But please know if you tell us something about your experience, it's going to help others understand. The phone number, 888-WMRA, talk, 888-967-2825. Dr. Eileen Ryan, psychiatrist, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy is the long name of the therapy that you found to be extremely effective in treatment for people who experience childhood sex abuse.
Yes, and it is a treatment that's used with children and adolescents who have experienced any significant trauma, including sexual abuse.
So tell us more about how it works.
Well, it works. There's training available in trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. There's an excellent website, actually. The University of South Carolina has a learning course, a web-based learning course. Therapists who do this kind of therapy also receive training. There are ways of receiving training over the course of a seminar. There's various types of supervision for this. And really, it is a time-limited therapy. As opposed to, you know, often people are very concerned about therapy stretching out for an indefinite period of time and sort of what's the end point? How do we know that we're ready to move on? And I'll call it TFCBT, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, is really a therapy that has very specific parts to it. One of the parts will be psychoeducation, which is, teaching the child and the parent about the therapy. There's a part of the therapy on stress management. And there's a part of the therapy, there's a variety of parts, but one of the parts is called a trauma narrative, creating a trauma narrative. And the point of that is to really try to uncouple the thoughts, reminiscences about the therapy from being overwhelmed by negative emotions. And the parent is after the child develops this trauma narrative with the therapist, and that takes several sessions, it is presented to the parent. And as Anna said earlier, you know, it's in keeping with this idea that the parent should be the person to whom the child can come with any problems and worries. And this gets to, you know, including the parent in a way that the parent is part of the treatment, because sometimes parents are so overwhelmed by what their child has been through that they avoid talking about it with the child. And that can set up a very sort of negative dynamic in which the child is protecting the parent from what they're going through. And this is a therapy, as I said before, there are many components to it, but it involves the parent. And it's really something that the child learns to manage their feelings, their emotions, and work through whatever the trauma is.
Dr. Ryan, I'm so glad that you brought up TFCBT. You and I are both on the same page with that. All the therapists at the Collins Center are trained in TFCBT, and that is the modality of treatment we use. And I love the way you put it, because we actually took it on because it has a huge parent component. A lot of people, when they find out their children are abused, they are scared and they don't know what to do, and they put them in therapy and say, please help my child. The truth is that parent is going to have the biggest impact on that child. So TFCBT lets us work with the parent while we're working with the children, educating them to be able to do, you know, healthy and reparative work with their child at home as well. And so we also have trained 6 other therapists in our area in TFCBT, because we want, when someone goes to therapy for sexual abuse, we want them to get treatment that is appropriate and that is with a therapist who knows what they're doing. Because there's a lot of really well-meaning therapists who get overwhelmed and aren't quite sure what to do. So this is a modality that I'm glad you brought up.
Licensed professional counselor Anna Arias is one of our guests. She's here in studio. Also with us by phone, psychiatrist Eileen Ryan. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. You can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK or on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And on Facebook, we have this from Donna, who says, it was easy talking with my kids about sex. It started when my oldest was 3 and asked about the baby growing in her aunt's belly. A simple answer laid the foundation for future questions, which eventually led to a dialogue about healthy relationships in her early teen years.
Well, that's a wonderful comment. I'm glad that when that question came up, the stork brought it, wasn't what the response was. That goes to show how often we don't know what to do when caught off guard. But that's wonderful that opened up that conversation. The more we're willing to talk about this, the more we're willing to answer these questions, the better it is for our kids. And if an adult doesn't know what is developmentally appropriate, you can always call us and say, my kid just asked me this question. I told him to hold on for a sec. What should I say? And we will help you with a developmentally appropriate answer. At the Collins Center, yep.
So why don't you give us some information about how people can contact the Collins Center?
Well, they're welcome to call. It's 432-6430. And we actually...
That's the area code 540.
Yeah, sorry.
And you also have a website that's thecollinscenter.org.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And our broadcast area covers much of the Shenandoah Valley, mm-hmm. as well as the greater Charlottesville region and south down to Farmville. My guess is that although you work mostly for Harrisonburg and Rockingham County, if somebody calls you, you, one, will give them what advice you can over the phone, mm-hmm. but two, you can also tell them some about... other centers that they might be able to contact that are closer to them?
Yeah, we would love to. We get so happy when someone wants to talk about this or ask us a question about it, because we do think that that's moving in the right direction. So we will always take a phone call and do the best we can to be supportive.
We also have this coming in on Facebook from Cameron responding to the question, can we break the taboo on discussing child sex abuse? Cameron says, what taboo? People discuss child sex abuse all the time. The media discovered it was a fantastic way to get ratings, and DAs found it could fast-track their careers. They shout sex abuse from the court steps. When it comes to child sex crimes, you are guilty until proven innocent, but even then, no one will believe you. And Cameron goes on at great length about his, I hope I'm summing this up fairly, belief that we have become so over the top about child sex abuse that people end up being convicted and accused in situations where they are completely innocent. And certainly there were situations some years ago in California, for example, a whole slew of people associated with daycare centers who were sent to jail and later found completely innocent. Mm-hmm. Do you, Eileen Ryan, do you have thoughts and reaction to Cameron's comments?
Well, I think there it's a good comment, a good question. I think that it speaks to the fact that everybody has a role to play in this. And one of the problems with those daycare center cases is when people are not appropriately educated about sexual abuse and also not appropriately trained and educated on how to interview children. I mean, this is a completely different topic, but interview techniques with children, you know, are very important. And the whole issue of suggestive interviewing and repeated interviewing. Suggestive interviewing may be very appropriate in a clinical venue, but in what we call a forensic in the forensic area is much more problematic.
And you are a forensic psychiatrist. In addition to being a therapist, you are part of the forensic psychiatry program at the University of Virginia, and you do investigations and often end up testifying in court where there is a question of whether or not a crime has been committed. Am I correct?
Yes.
So to what degree do you think Cameron might be right that we can be so over-concerned about this issue that we end up doing harm?
I think that it is something to be aware of. I think that, you know, one of the important aspects that I've been involved in is by the time that I get involved with a case, sometimes the child has been interviewed repeatedly and in ways that sort of contaminate the information that it's really hard to know what happened. So I think that certainly there is the risk that people will be falsely accused and found guilty when they're not. I think that that's something that really needs to be addressed with greater education in the legal system, in the criminal system. And the solution is not to sort of ignore the fact that this exists. So like everything else, it's a delicate balance of risks and benefits.
Madeline in Charlottesville, we've got just a brief amount of time left, but we're glad you called. Your question or comment quickly, if you could. Madeline, are you still there?
Yes, I'm there. I'm sorry. I couldn't understand what you were saying.
So we have just a little bit of time left. Could you make your comment quickly, please?
Yeah.
And if you could turn down your radio, there's a delay there that's going to make it sound strange in the background.
Okay, great. I've got the radio off. I just was going to comment about that someone had posted on the Facebook page that if you are accused of sexually abusing someone, that you know, you're guilty until proven innocent, and then even culturally, people will hold that against you. And the media does over-sensationalize the whole child abuse thing, but especially with the Penn State situation, I've been noticing a lot how I feel really distressed because I feel like the media is responding appropriately, and I feel like everybody is upset, but people are upset that someone abused children, and people aren't really responding in the way of how is it affecting the kids who are abused. They're responding in, oh, my God, somebody who's culturally important abused kids.
Yeah,
so I just thought that was...
it's a good thing that your gut is to be upset about the kids. I think that that's what we should all be upset about. I do think that some people are afraid if we talk about this, then kids will falsely accuse. That just doesn't happen. It's very, very rare. False reporting and sexual abuse, it's very, very rare. Kids aren't going to want to talk about something so personal, so private, and so embarrassing if it didn't happen. However, since most offenders are known to the child, the first thing that most parents and adults say when a kid discloses is, "Are you sure? Really?" And then, of course, if the perpetrator says, "Well, that kid's just lying," what's it going to be easier to believe you have a kid who lies or you have a perpetrator in your family?
Madeline, thank you so much for your call. We're just about out of time. I want to end where we started with you, Anna Arias, talking about why you want more adults uncomfortable. 30 seconds to make your case.
Well, it's not fair to ask kids to stop sexual abuse once it's started to them. It's not fair to ask kids to stop being sexually abused. But it is fair to say to adults, you know what? We need to talk about this. This is a problem. It does exist. And let's be willing to be uncomfortable with each other and with adults having these conversations and making sure that this community is a community where kids can be safe.
And Dr. Ryan, it's my understanding that one of the points you most want people to take away from this discussion is there is effective treatment available for people who have been victimized.
Yes.
Our guests have been Eileen Ryan, forensic psychiatrist, faculty member in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Virginia, and staff psychiatrist at the Commonwealth Center for Children and Adolescents. Plus, Anna Arias, licensed professional counselor, as well as associate director of the Collins Center and Child Advocacy Center, based in Harrisonburg. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. If you go to that page, you can find links to more information about both of our guests. Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We got extra help today from Dan Easley. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Juspe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.